prepare for getting ready for the... So your next plan is to go to Sacramento, huh?
Yeah, now I'm just going to try to take it easy this week and work on the gardens and our getting our sweat lodge done, which we hope to have done tomorrow. We want to go in and do a Sundancer sweat next Friday on the Equinox, which is the same day as shutting down Nestle's.
You want to go before you go in? Before you leave?
No, actually after.
Yeah.
The shutdown will be 4:30 in the morning, and the Equinox is about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, West Coast time. It's actually 3:39 or something like that. So we'll have her shut down by noon, and then I can leave, make the 3-hour trip back. The trip to Creech was 15 hours each way. It was grueling. It took a lot of money, took a lot of energy. I came home, you know, sore throat, and my immune system was really taxed. And I wasn't able to get back on the bandwagon 2 days later and meet up with Radley Davis and the Pitt River Tribe down in Quartz in San Francisco over the Medicine Lake disaster, where Halliburton is drilling into that sacred lake above us. So I wanted to be part of that action, but my body just, I'm 54 years old, I just can't do it like I used to. So I need about a week between actions.
Ah.
But my heart was really heavy that day because I wanted to be with my Native brothers and sisters down there. I've stood with them before on Medicine Lake and done radio shows on it.
Yeah.
But it's always good to pack the courtroom to where they have to open up a second courtroom, which is what happened last time I was there. They had to give them a second courtroom just for the overflow on closed-circuit TV. That really lets the judges know they gotta do it right.
I'm hearing... Go ahead.
That's it.
That an earth ceremony where there's a Inipi or a sweat lodge, Inipi, however you want to call it, is one of the safest places to be on Earth. Can you give your views on how earth ceremonies can recharge or rekindle at least something about the human spirit and body?
Well, what I always feel is just the oneness between everybody in there and the ground under me and the earth above me. And, you know, we're praying for the animals. We get a chance to all really think about what is the most important things in our lives. And, you know, we're not praying about our jobs. I never hear that come up. Not praying about our cars, oil. We're all praying for the children we're never going to see that, you know, are going to have our bloodlines. We're praying for that seventh generation that hopefully that when each of us go to our grave, on our deathbeds, that we'll see a clear path to them. And right now, that's what's bothering me the most, is that as I get older, and I'm, you know, I don't want to leave this world so uncertain as it is right now. That's just not a good way to go. So in the sweat lodge and all that, Sundance, I really get a chance to feel the oneness and understand that I'm part of God, and God's in me as much as anywhere else, you know, in a tree, and that I'm connected to that tree through God, and I'm connected to you through God, and all your listeners through God, that only on the surface do we appear to be separate. It's kind of like there's one big giant ocean of God, and each of us are the tip of a wave, but just underneath us, we're all the same ocean. And that's what I feel in the sweat lodge. And that's not only invigorating and rejuvenating, but it brings about an enlightenment that, unless you want to drop it when you come out of that lodge, you can carry that for the rest of your life.
And, yeah.
You know, every day that we're born, every day that we're awake, we're born again. And we get a chance to live our best. Every day, we can drop whatever it is that we did yesterday. We can forgive ourselves and move forward And today is the day that we can be Christ. Today is the day we can be Buddha. And there's only now. And how we choose to live that now is completely up to us. We can be that most powerful being, or we can be an asshole.
Yeah. You're saying you can drop it or carry it. So
you
what?
Can drop it or carry it. It's up to us. Like people, I hear them praying for their health, and God, I really want to be healthy. I really want to quit smoking cigarettes. Then they get out of the lodge and they light up the cigarette. So
yeah,
that's what I mean by dropping it.
Oh, you mean you really are giving some intention inside, and you don't want it when you get out.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is it the safest place to be on Earth? I mean, that's just philosophical, I'm sure, but it's also a truth when you're connected, because it's a fortification of your of beingness. It's togetherness, unity. So allegiance to the planet. It's the best place to be if there's any kind of disaster. Is that what you think?
I hear people suggesting things like that. I think the odds are better in your favor. But at the same time, our spirituality doesn't protect us. It didn't protect Gandhi, Martin Luther King from their deaths. It didn't protect Jesus. And I no longer tell people that, because the things that I'm doing now can get me killed if they consider me a big enough threat. But the greater security that you're talking about is there because I believe in the internal life, and whether it's reincarnation or otherwise, I would far rather be cut down defending the earth in a short life than I would be to live a really long, old life of greed and power. And that's the security that I would rather have. And that's similar to what Jesus said when he said you would lose your life to gain it. And he's talking about the greater life. And I didn't repeat his words exactly, but basically, anybody who wants to keep their life
has to lose it.
Has to live a righteous life, and that includes getting beheaded. Ask John the Baptist.
But the ones that are beheading people. All right, I'm getting way off. Anyway,
that's all right. Go ahead.
So there are those who believe that it's for the greater good to do these things. U.S. created a state like ISIS to show up. I don't know.
I totally think ISIS is created by the CIA, the Mossad, and the ISI.
Yeah, but
just like Al Qaeda was.
If you talk like that and you're going in, probably just making more out of this. You can't talk like that when you're going into a spiritual, prayerful lodge. Or else, what? It's not... How do you reconcile both those?
Most people aren't ready to hear that one.
Right.
About ISIS. And a lot of Christians aren't ready to hear turn the other cheek.
Right.
But, I avoid conversation that would confuse somebody from where they are spiritually.
I see.
You can't take them to a higher level when they haven't reached the lower levels necessary to get them there. So I avoid the conversation about ISIS not being the enemy we think it is unless I see an end in the conversation and I can ease them into it. But to do that, I have to really show them where Osama bin Laden came from and how That's already been proven with Al-Qaeda, how Al-Qaeda got formed. And there are people coming forward, in United States officials and intelligence officers who have already come forward and explained how ISIS got formed. And there's no doubt there's tens of thousands of Arab Muslim descended, and I say descended because they're not living a Muslim life by killing. But there are plenty of people over there who have nothing to do with the CIA, but still they're falling into the trap created by the CIA, and the creation of that is through the leaders of ISIS who were created and trained through the Mossad. And that's been proven. A lot of ISIS officers that have been wounded on the battlefield are going into Israel to get hospital care.
You're going into Israel?
Yeah. They're not going in as ISIS. I'm sure they're undercover. They're not publicizing, oh, this man in this hospital is an ISIS warrior. They're not doing it that way. You got to remember that Osama bin Laden was getting dialysis in a United States military hospital on September 10th, 2011.
The American Revolution. And welcome to another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and I'll be with you, and maybe you'll be with me. We have special guest Courtney Hansen, and from jail, Rebecca Mills. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star, and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Darker than the dark. rock bottom, it rumbles more than the rumba. If you think that the two-step got 'em, just take a look at this number. It's got that certain swing that makes you wanna sing. Don't go left, but be polite. Move to the right, doing the reactionary. Close your eyes to where you're bound, and you'll be found doing the reactionary. All the best dictators do it. Millionaires keep stepping to it. The 400 love to sing it. Ford and Morgan swing it. Hand up high and shake your head. You'll soon see red doing the reactionary.
Don't go left, but be polite. Move to the right,
doing the reactionary.
Close your eyes to where you're bound, and you'll be found
doing the reactionary.
All the best dictators do it. Millionaires keep stepping to it. The 400 love to sing it.
Ford and Morgan swing it. Hand up high
and shake your head. You'll soon see red
doing the react,
doing the react.
So get in it, begin it. It's smart, oh so very, to do the reactionary.
Yeah, that's two from Pins and Needles. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. As I mentioned before, we will have a special guest in the studio, Courtney Hansen, who's with Sin Baras, a group concerned with abolishing prisons, or at least making them less odious in the meantime. And I'm going to kind of also be having a special guest by with a taped interview earlier from jail, the Santa Cruz County Jail, a woman named Rebecca Mills, who is going to be talking about her case and the situation in jail. And that should be interesting. So stay with us and call in if you have some thoughts of your own, if you have some updates, some breaking news. 427-3772 is the call-in number, and I really encourage you to call in. Because you should, and it'll be good, and stuff like that. Last time, on Sunday, I was playing an interview with various people at the Public Works Fluffer Booster event, and I'm going to be playing some more of that. We left it in the middle of an interview with the city manager, Martine Bernal, who's a very powerful figure in the city, probably the most highly paid individual in the city government. And he was fielding questions for me about what was then the issue that I've kind of been holding on to with my teeth, although it's really a very small part of a very big problem, which is the ban on 24-hour parking at the homeless lack of services center street area, which is being pushed and apparently has been accomplished, although it's not entirely clear if it's a permanent ban. I suppose it depends on an appeal to the city council. I would suspect it is a permanent ban. And it is part of, you know, the anti-homeless policies toward vehicles on the street, which are, there's this sort of particular weird passion for harassing or driving away or criminalizing or frightening people in vehicles. I mean, we not only have a sleeping ban at night, we have parking bans in many of the permit parking areas at night, or at least in the wee hours of the morning from midnight to 6 or thereabouts. We also, however, are now going to have a 24-hour ban, no parking at any time without a permit, on Limekiln, Fern, and Coral Streets near the Homeless Lack of Service Center. You're going to hear Martine Bernal talking about that, or I should say not talking about that, as I attempt to buttonhole him at the Public Works it was a street closure that was celebrating the Public Works. I think that was a with a laugh. I'm going to do a little more of a musical break. I'll also introduce my, would you call him a co-host, an interloper? What is your posture,
troublemaker.
Sir? Troublemaker in the studio.
Gadfly.
He's also a man who has his own show and who's also been covering to some extent things down in Monterey, where apparently he missed the boat with a recent sitting band protest. Or was it a court appearance of the Monterey 8? I'm not sure what the story was.
Well, I was living down there.
And you are living down. Yeah, you are live. So now you can tell us your address. He's not. He's lying. He isn't living. He doesn't. He's.
I still
he's,
get an email.
He's. In any case, I should get an update from you on that. Maybe you can do that and tell us what's up. Anything?
I've been reading some emails about it. There's a new ordinance going in there for safe parking or whatever, and someone was upset. Timothy Barrett or something was upset that it was only going to be allowed in church groups. Not businesses. Like Santa Cruz, you could have somebody sleep at a business, right? In a parking lot, one or two.
A business or a nonprofit, you're allowed to have two vehicles with the written permission of the owner and the leaser or whatever who owns the business. I think that's what it is.
Well, there's a group down there, One Starfish, that she's trying to get some kind of housing for the safe parking for the homeless. I think she's pushing the agenda. But this is other guy like
yeah, I'm not really familiar with how successful. I've not heard almost everybody I've talked to. Maybe they just haven't talked to me in the last 15 years in interviews of the show. A few have mentioned they've been given the option to park in these business or nonprofit parking lots. Mm-hmm. More in churches, although not so much there either. Three vehicles per parking lot. You were allowed to do that since 1995, when this was pushed to city council by sort of as a what you call it, a cooling off measure to protesters. I don't know, or maybe just a
reform,
humanitarian. The fig leaf under the covering
They give a reform to shut down their protest.
Yeah, but I don't even know if there was much protest. I mean, okay. I think they also do it as a way of burnishing up their liberal credentials, as they being the city council and
The waiting list from Peace Camp.
The waiting list proposal was a substantive reform, theoretically at least.
Theoretically, a reform.
That was probably the most significant reform, and it was done not through any lobbying effort, but only because of a protest that endured for 3 months.
Well, also Ed Fry's legal argument that it's harassment to wake people up when all the cops have to do is call.
I don't know what his legal argument. I mean, they've been making that one for years.
But I know it's right after that.
Although Ed is, I'm going to call Ed on the air, I think, in order to try to get his. He feels that this latest development, I kind of didn't mention it for you, but regular listeners probably know about it, and not so much listeners. People keep their eyes on the homeless, shelter scene. The announcement by Janan Thomas, executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Homeless Service Center, announced to city council 2 days ago, and I was told by Michael Posner the day before, that the federal government has cut off HUD has cut off all funding or much funding to emergency shelter programs. So there will
everywhere around the country,
at least in the three counties, this county and the two surrounding counties, Monterey and I think either Santa Clara or San Benito, I'm not sure which. And that is going to result, she was telling us, in the closure of the Pauley Loft, the closure of the Armory Shelter,
the
closure
Armory as well. Wow.
Yeah, closure of all meals, unless they can find $200,000 or $300,000 to make up for the deficit. And
what
of course,
they spend all that fucking money on anyway?
Well, it's
don't
there,
they own that property?
There is
there,
a
the
there is I you know they have a they have a I think their budget is $2 or $3 million a year.
What are
and,
they spending?
And I you know that's only a fraction of it, but I mean they have to pay the salaries of all these. They're also letting a lot of people go. They're gonna lay off a lot of probably lowly paid workers.
Sure, then first.
And keep the boys and the girls at the top. Yeah. Although I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm always that's my cynical
sure.
Couldn't meet it.
And
I would jump to that conclusion immediately.
Jump to that.
And could well be correct. Correct, for sure.
But that's what I was saying. I was talking to Michael about it, and he says this has happened before, and hopefully they'll get some money or something and reopen it. But I'm thinking, why? I mean, if they own
not aware
property,
it's happened before.
Well, I don't know. It's whatever. But in any event, I mean, this is exactly what... I mean, Brent could do this for nothing. He could do what they do for a lot less than $2 million. And also, if this means there's only one shelter, so if that shelter's full, the homeless can sleep anywhere in town. They have a what do you call it, necessity defense, because there is no legal place to sleep. So maybe we should, you know, put them on the city council, you know, sidewalks in front of the city council members.
Right. Well, the problem, of course, is that that's not going to stop the police from ticketing them and harassing them.
Well, there's not going to jail for them either, Rob.
And therefore, well, it doesn't matter. They don't have to be jailed. They just have to be fined. They take away their driver's license, destroy their credit.
Well, that's already happened to a lot of
them. And, you know, then you cook up these
right.
phony programs that, you know, Homeward Bound them to no home somewhere else.
Well, they're creating you know. A homeless problem. By doing that, now these people can't go out and get jobs or licenses because they've got that, you know, all
right.
that money
but this,
they
this
owe.
Is the, yeah, this is, you know, I mean, the point is
they're
that
permanently
we...
permanently homeless.
So the situation is...
Because of the city.
You know, that I don't see... Ed Fry is talking about doing some kind of lawsuit, as you say, but, you know, that's... I always commend any kind of pressure, you know, legal, extra legal, illegal, sublegal,
better,
you name
yeah.
it.
We always do the same old crap all the time, and they know how to deal with that. We have to come up with new stuff.
And of course, any creative stuff is always always.
No, it isn't always welcome. Everybody wants to do the old stuff.
Is sometimes welcome. Let me see if I can find place where we left off. However, last week, because I want to get into the voices from the street, but that to some extent is what's happening.
That's big news, Robert.
It's you know is out there, and it's. I was listening to the. We had a Huff meeting yesterday and mentioned it, and what I suggested the thing we needed to do is get the police budget. See, the budget hearings are also happening.
Mm-hmm.
They happened yesterday and the day before,
mm-hmm.
and that's where these cutbacks were announced. Was at the budget hearing that evening, and there'll be final budget on June 9th. But according to Micah Posner, I keep quoting him, and I'm a little wary of doing that. But he says that budget is 80% decided at these was decided yesterday and the day before. So I went online to get the budget with a tip of the hat to Kevin, who has kind of researched it and found it there. I couldn't find it earlier in the day. Maybe it wasn't there earlier in the day. Who knows?
Over half of all the money that we spend.
And the police have 29% of the budget.
That's all?
The Parks and Rec have 12% of the budget. According to their pie graph, their pie charts, but that's still a lot of money. That makes up almost half the budget together. And
are they
giving
out pensions?
And the golf course, I don't know. The golf course.
How much is the golf course?
Golf course gets more money. I think it gets, I've got it written down. I think I'll get back to it after we play a little of this. I pursued Martine Bernal, the city manager, who is really the most powerful person in the city.
Yes, he is. More powerful than the city council.
And much more powerful. And he was there, you know, kind of wandering around, parading about, and at the, well, parading isn't quite the word, but making a public presence along with Don Lane and Micah Posner. And I think even Cynthia Matthews later in the day showed up, although I wasn't, I'd suggest that she missed an opportunity to be interviewed, and she was not really too concerned about that, Cynthia and I. Actually, Cynthia, unlike Don Lane, actually scheduled an interview with me when she became mayor the second time. But I don't know about the third time. But Don did not. I asked him for an interview. But this time I was able to, went up to him and began asking him questions while he was in this public place. And he answered. And I played that last time. His answers were not terribly educational.
He's
evasive. He's not evasive is probably a good way of putting it. Let's see where we are on this interview with Martine Bernal, which I played part of last Sunday. To the Public Works Transportation Public Works Commission. We attempted to do that in this last issue. We were told that they would not accept any complaints from people who were not property owners. And what I'm talking about here is this process, this new, not convoluted, but really kind of sneaky and I think extra legal or illegal process that the Public Works Department, the parking section of the Public Works Department, Marlon Granlund, who's the man there, is using or is being instructed to use or his underlings are using it and he's okaying it, which in essence says we can make any changes in any permit parking area throughout the city that's already been established unless 2/3 of the people in that area send in complaints and refuse to do it. Or object to it. I mean, what they do is they do send out little cards saying, we're planning a change, please let us know if you don't like this or if you want something else done. Or there's it'll be going into effect in a month. And they sent that out on April 13th, all these cards for the 24-hour ban on all vehicle parking on Limekiln, Coral, and Fern Streets, which are the three streets close to the Homeless Lack of Services Center out there at Highway 1 and Highway 9. Where the service center is located, and all the other services, Pauley Loft, you know, all that stuff. that's where Polly Loft was before the closure was announced by Jen and Thomas day before yesterday. So what he did was he claimed that he could just, with a stroke of the pens, for example, put in a 24-hour parking ban unless you have permits, which is not done anywhere else in the city. There's no such thing as a 24-hour parking ban, or won't be until this ban goes into effect. And
Really? Yeah,
that's correct. There are bans.
And they're painted red. That was the only other.
They would, in essence, that's probably what they would do, is paint them red unless you have a permit, in which case you could park there. Or they'll put up signs that say no parking at any time unless you have a permit. There's no such signs anywhere else in the city. There are bans, you know, over in the boardwalk area seasonally, but only during the day and not at night. You know, I mean, at least that's what I've seen. There's certainly not a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year ban on parking anywhere. And so he's decided this can be done just by sending out a little card saying, we're doing it unless two-thirds of you object. And since probably two-thirds of people don't even read the damn cards, I mean, I don't know. I mean, and these cards don't go out to, you know, the general public. They go out to only property owners in the area, and also to the Homeless Lack of Services Center itself, which Jan and Thomas, even though Micah Posner, I was urging him to urge her to oppose this, she did not oppose it. She, according to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, she supported it because it was a necessary police measure. She'd conferred with the police, and it was necessary. Now, for those who are cynical or just realistic, it's often, you know, the case that poverty pimps pack with the police. They have to be for their own well-being, in the sense that the police are a powerful, powerful group. I'm not saying the police are going to assassinate them or anything, but
they need to call them.
They use them for homeless control. Yeah, and they also this is, of course, there is a strong right-wing pressure movement in this community. The last, and very explicitly in the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. Called Take Back Santa Cruz, or the Clean Team, allegedly concerning itself with crime, but actually concerning itself with gentrification, real estate property values, and
their original message got hijacked.
Getting rid of homeless folks.
It was supposed to start to be against gang violence, but when was the last time you heard them do anything about that? It's always about
that. Right, and then, you know, they're talking, you know, they use a certain, you know, selected high-profile killings. Shannon Collins, Elizabeth Butler, Sticky Fingers, Lauren Baker, Butchie Baker, to inflame the community. Why do I call him Sticky Fingers Baker?
Well, that had nothing to do with the homeless. Why did they bring him up? You know?
Yeah, well, they brought...
It was a resident, someone who was a resident. We got to get rid of the residents in Santa Cruz if that's their...
Right, and the point is they use this alleged crime wave to justify creating a public safety task force 2 years ago that primarily cooked up new laws, regulations, policies, and restrictions against the homeless community. Had nothing to do with real crime, nothing to do with rapes or assaults, all about so-called nuisance crime, which is, you know, these human beings treating them as pests, insects, and other... And, yeah, the survival behavior. So, in any case, let's hear some more from Martin Bernal talking about the permit parking. He goes through his usual kind of routines and raps. I don't know. I haven't talked to him much the last couple of years. Used to have talked to him more when he was the assistant city manager.
I hear he's not a very bright guy.
Actually, your mic is down, but now you're back up again. So
I hear the word on the street is he's not a very bright guy.
Martin, I don't know. I can't say. You know, he.
I can't say either. I don't know. But
yeah, no. I mean, I don't know.
He's
you know, I don't know if he's any dumber than anybody else. I mean, city manager. You know, he's at least he's
previous city manager was a very bright guy.
He's cadged himself into a position. Richard Wilson was the previous city manager, Dick Wilson, and what a dick he was.
He was, but I heard he was a bright guy.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I assume you have to have a certain amount of smarts to get into some of these positions, at least be able to beat out other people.
George Bush, come on.
Yeah, well, you don't get elected to the city manager position. You get appointed.
That's true.
In any case, let's hear some of this and see what's up.
In the area, we were also told that unless they got two-thirds of the property owners to say, we don't want a 24-hour ban, they would unilaterally initiate it and would not proceed to, you know, discuss the issue further. They sent out cards a month in advance asking for the residents' views. Now, my understanding of permit parking is it does take two-thirds to actually opt in to such a program, but then that's done on the basis of what the program is described as doing. So for usually it's a two-hour limit during the day without a permit, maybe a nighttime ban, which is an anti-homeless ban in my view. But it doesn't involve a 24-hour ban, which apparently Marlon Granlund now states is something that he can unilaterally do on and of his own accord. I don't expect you to be an expert in the city law, but I find this a curious interpretation. When I asked him why, you know, to confirm this, he told me, I'm checking with the city attorney, and then never got back to me. So I'm wondering if I can get you to find out what exactly the law is on this matter and what the current policy of the parking department of the Public Works Department is.
Current policy? I don't know if there's a...
In other words, what is the procedure? Who can make complaints? What percentage is needed? Under what circumstances does it go to the Public Works Commission, transport, those are the three questions. And if you want, I can put those in an email for you and send them to you if that's easier.
Sure, that's fine.
Anything you wish to say about your new position as of 8 years ago as the city manager?
No, thanks.
Thank you, Martine.
I kiss a little ass.
So we're listening to Phil Posner, who's a Camp of Last Resort guy, talking with Danette Shoemaker.
Well, but if we convince you, it would help as well, obviously.
And Danette walks off saying that she is thinking about it.
Well, that's the first time she's actually said she indicated kind of a positive viewpoint, just now when she said...
And we've actually heard a lot of this, those of you who are regular listeners, last show, so I'm going to spin ahead a bit. What we're talking about, Phil Posner is a guy who wants to establish what's called a camp of last resort, which there are those who criticized Brent Adams being naive because of having a sanctuary village or a sanctuary camp, which, you know, is clean and drug-free and very limited to a small number of people, and... for trying to embrace middle-class values instead of essentially addressing the broader homeless community needs and realities is how I see it. I mean, I think Brent is very well-intentioned. I mean, he's struggling, you know, to get this kind of stuff done.
He's doing the warming center. That's highly effective. The warming center that Brent came up with has been highly effective. He probably saved some lives with that. But that's an issue the other side can't really fight against because they're talking about people dying. So they can't really go after, or they're looking at a lawsuit if they fuck with them.
Phil Posner's Camp of Last Resort idea, which is another similar sort of attempt to say, let's establish a park area where there's no legal place for people to go to sleep. Well, they can go here. We'll make sure that it's patrolled with security guards and it's fenced off. And these are things that and can't have tents up during the day that are kind of even a step more controlling or repressive, some would say, than Brent's proposal.
Right.
And, you know, they don't get much, I don't know how much support they're getting among homeless folks, except the idea...
Well, Razor Ray loves the Posner camp and hates the Brent camp.
You mean the... yes. Well, that's interesting.
You know, the Indie Bay poster.
I do know Razor Ray. You know, he's often...
He is homeless.
Occasionally threatening me with physical violence.
That's right.
He's a very passionate guy. And, you know, some of the things he says are very incisive and very thoughtful and very much to the point. Others are way out in paranoid land.
Right. But so. He does like the Posner. That's his idea, too. Just a daytime... I mean, only a nighttime.
I think Becky Johnson has proposed something similar, at least with parking garages. Gone by Dawn.
Right.
People can park in the...
Peace
top.
Camp was the same way. It was,
and
it was
Peace Camp,
to have been the
Peace
same
Camp
way.
Which was a camp that was set in front of the county building by Ed Fry back in 2010 when Robert Facer, an older guy who died subsequently, who paddled all the way down from Alaska, he said, or at least from Sacramento, and a kind of an Amish minister in his own way. That's how he saw himself. He didn't use any motor vehicles.
He was building a mosaic temple down by SoCal under the bridge.
And he actually he created the huge tent a year later for the Occupy movement. Helped to put that together. He was being delayed. He was giving tickets for sleeping on his boat or sleeping on the beach, and they wouldn't, you know, the courts were screwing around with him.
Of course.
And Ed Fry's then did did a protest in front of the courts, which turned into a homeless encampment for 50 at night anyway, and he had brought a porta potty and so forth.
It turned into a day, a 24-hour one eventually.
And it was 24 hours to some extent,
against
too.
Against Ed's wishes.
Right. And of course, Huff members, I've got to give all of us credit, started it for the first week. We were there sleeping illegally on the steps at night. Although, you know, it's...
Linda got a ticket.
And eventually, Linda and 60 other people got cited under the 647E anti-lodging misdemeanor state code. They didn't give anyone any tickets under the sleeping ban.
Because it didn't apply there.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's true. I think that they've been done that in the past. I think they didn't want, they wanted to pretend it didn't apply there and leave the problem to the county, but that's my view.
Yeah, that's my view, too.
Yeah.
I think there's some in any case,
you know, the issue that we talked about different kinds of suggestions. People, you know, sleep where they have to, sleep where they must, sleep where they can, and that's just what happens. It's just makes it more miserable and uncomfortable, and I guess that's the point.
That's the point.
Is to make it as difficult as possible for people under the theory. Get you can drive away the Okies, the Japanese, the Jews,
exactly.
The blacks, get rid of them, get them out of here, you know, we don't want them here. It's, you know, it's a rather retrograde idea.
Yes.
And
this is actually a federal issue, though. The feds should be the ones paying for this, and they do, but it goes to these local clowns that just spend it on themselves and don't provide the actual sleeping. I think the feds should give out vouchers to the homeless where you don't get the money unless the homeless actually gets to bed.
That's not a bad idea. In any case, we then talked with Martine Bernal, I mentioned before, about this permit parking stuff. And I guess, trying to find the damn thing. And I think I will find it in just a moment. This machine is often tries to defeat me. It's a plot. Let's see where we are. Let's try it. Let's start here and see where we're at.
No, thanks.
Thank you, Martine. I kiss a little ass if you want. So we're listening to Phil Posner, who's a Camp of Last Resort guy, talking with Danette Shoemaker.
Well, but if we convince you, it would help as well, obviously.
And I think we've done this, so I'm going to move forward a bit more. And just to review, last time we played Phil talking to Danette Shoemaker, who didn't give him much time to talk. She's the head of the Parks and Rec Department. Mm-hmm. Phil wants to set up a kind of a protest or an example camp just for one night and he is applying for a permit for a protest mm-hmm. campground. And
that's
she's
the same thing Brent tried to do.
And Brent tried to do the same thing, and he was, of course, turned down. She's smarter this time. She's not turning him down, but she's not granting the permit. She's doing what Marlon Granlund did to me, is simply saying, I'm not sure, I'll get back to you, and then doesn't get back
stalling.
To you. Yeah, stalling is what's being done.
Why not
just
will you be available to park in and parks?
On behalf of homeless people who have no place to go, you know. And because the Parks and Rec Department, while it's saying it's thinking about it, is doing an awful lot of thinking.
Well, Steve and I have been negligent. We got to go make appointments with the city council, and I keep waiting for him to do that, and so I got
to
just do it myself.
In public, you know, and Unitarian Universalists, we are known for...
But they don't do it here. They may be well known for it everywhere else, but they...
This is Lucero Luna, who is a homeless woman who's been coming to Huff meetings and has been also, you know, assisting us in these protests. We initially began a week ago with this encounter with the different officials at the Public Works Fair, if you will, or a street closure, by just walking around and talking to them. Then we set up a table, and we were told immediately that we would be arrested unless we left. I couldn't set up a table there because it's insurance problems. And I said, I'd be happy to sign a waiver indicating that I'm not going to hold the city accountable for anything. And he still insisted he'd call the police. This is some official, I should know his name. I recognize him at city council, but I didn't catch his name. But we set up the table, and he just eventually sort of faded into the background. Interestingly enough, the parking table, the parking department that is doing this criminalization of the homeless out on these three streets and broadly extending the ban for the public, because it affects every member of the public, not just homeless people. Anybody who wants to use the remains of the homeless lack of services center or wants to park on those streets at any time at all is now going to have to go, you know, ante up money to the city to do it. So I guess it's also a revenue device of a kind, and it's just it's being done without any public hearing, and they're refusing to send send it to the Transportation and Public Works Commission.
Well, I don't think you've covered this issue yet, is that the storage lockers were torn out of the homeless service center a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so the homeless, you know, the nearby cars is one of the few places they can keep their stuff. So now that's been taken away as well.
Right. And so you can't keep your stuff in your car parked nearby. Because right now you can only park your car for 2 hours. And again, the idea there, they have this so-called no or low impact zone around the homeless lack of services center, which apparently is a no First Amendment zone either. I mean, I'm not just speaking, you know, metaphorically, whimsically, or cynically. We attempted to set up a table there. You may remember, for you, but you were there.
I was there for one of them. You go back again.
And Frank, no, that was only the only time we went out there. And okay. Officer Azua came and told us we couldn't do that. And I said, well, you better get an employee out here to tell us, because I don't believe you, because, you know, you have no say so here. This is their property.
Right.
And then he did. He dragged an employee out there, and the employee, the woman, in a tone of high dudgeon, first said, "You can't be inside the gates." We weren't inside the gates. We were outside, right next to the sidewalk. I said, "We'll be out here then." And she said, "No, you won't. That's also you can't do that either." So,
well, to clarify, there's the sidewalk, then there's a there's a little piece of dirt or whatever that's technically their property, and that's what they're all upset about. They're not using it for anything.
Correct.
They're just
fucking
with you.
And so it's just gotten a lot worse. And, you know, I mean, if I had a bolder group, I wouldn't mind, you know, making an issue of it, because I think it's...
that's a great spot for your protest, because there's already a cop there, and all your whole audience is
right. I think so. And they got a bunch of security
of
thugs hanging around.
Right,
and so
you got a lot of signatures, too.
We did. We got about 30 signatures at that time, and then we got more... Strangely enough, from a lot of middle-class people at the Public Works Fair that you're now hearing the audio from. I mean, we told them what was being done, that they were denying parking spaces to handicapped and disabled people near the homeless lack of services center. This is before, mind you, we learned that they're going to be cutting back essentially all the majority services of the homeless lack of services center. In other words,
no food.
In other words, there's only food for those who are in the programs, and the programs would be the Reveille Family Shelter, the Paige Smith Community House, maybe the River Street Shelter. I think they probably will remain. But not the Paul E. Loft, and not the general public, not the general homeless public. So those services that actually did serve a larger number of people are now going to be eliminated unless, you know, they find some money somewhere to continue them.
Well, and what is this exactly?
I believe it's, you know, I'm a little hazy on this. I thought she said at the end of June, but then I also thought she might have said, immediately or as soon as possible. So I actually was listening to her brief speech at City Council. It's now on video and it's now available online, the entire City Council meeting, both yesterday's and the one before. There are some who listened to it who found her very heartrending and felt that you could hear a pin drop in the room, and that it was deeply, you know, it really upset the council. And I got none of that when I heard this. She sounded like she was sort of reading off of a script. She sounded to me like, you know, all she was saying was reciting stats that were sort of, you know, in a rote manner. Maybe she was shell shocked. I didn't get that impression either, though. And I'm really beginning to form the conclusion that she's sort of a young, hard-boiled hypocrite, as many, I think, service providers have to be, in the sense that they can't be candid and open about the kinds of rights they're denying and the kinds of restrictions they're imposing and the kind of very limited token services they're providing if they want to, A, appeal to the broader public, they want to get money from them, and B, present a nice picture for what they're doing, and C, appease the police and the politicians. I mean, it's quite a balancing act they have to do.
Yeah, it's difficult.
But, you know,
who was this, the director?
Jan and Thomas, previously Monica Martinez, previously Doug Lizell, previously...
But she'll still have a job, right?
I presume so, although she hasn't... I mean, to me, that would be the
that's 80 grand
the principled,
right there.
The principled thing to do would be to say, I am not going to preside over a situation where the majority of people are going to be denied their services and a small, token, creamed group is going to get continued services as a way of prettying up the picture for the city. I will not be a party to this. I came up here to serve the homeless community, not to serve the politicians who want to appear to be serving the homeless community. That would have been the principal thing for her to do. And she hasn't done that. So my thought is, frankly, fuck off. And I got to tell you, I've emailed her about the much more limited issue that we've talked about here, the 24-hour parking ban, and said, do you support it? And she has declined to answer that. She keeps saying, well, you know, I'll make an appointment. We'll talk. And she said this several times. And you know, oh, I'm really busy this week. And I imagine she is. That's not the issue. But she won't answer that kind of question. And instead, she does answer it to the Sentinel or the Urinal, as
right.
I call our paper right. of refuse or of record, depending how you want to look at it.
Well, I heard you saying earlier, Robert, that there's emails are being sent around on how to deal with Robert by just stalling him. And so it sounds like she got that email.
Well, there was one email, and I've only found one so far, that Bren Lehr, the city administrator, sent to Marlon Granlin that advised him that he did not have to answer my questions. He could, and if Robert squawks, just tell him he has to go make a Public Records Act request. I was actually trying to spare the city staff
the expense,
the time and the effort, and myself the delay.
Right.
In getting this information, but they apparently are, they're nervous about it, or they're high-handed about it. They feel they don't have to respond, or they're resentful about it. I don't know what. It's hard to really pinpoint what the exact motives
are.
Have
you ever gone after the Public Works before?
Yeah, I think at different points, but not so much recently. Public Works was responsible for eliminating seating spaces downtown in front of.
They spent a few.
Yes, they got the police department to spend $6,000 on that, essentially because they didn't like now deceased musician Cosmic Chris playing in front of their store. Cosmic Chris is pretty good musician, but I guess they feel they own the sidewalk and therefore they have a right to do whatever they want with anybody on it, which they now essentially businesses now do. There's
they
only one.
Do, yeah.
There's 1% of the sidewalk. That you can less than 1% you can sit on, and I've noticed also if you walk along the sidewalk, those blue, yellow, and red demarcation marks that set up little boxes or what I call pens on the
right.
sidewalk for performers are mostly gone.
Gone,
and they're gone. I think mostly because of the rain or because they were removed. There's still a few around the coffee roasting company. I saw some, but up near the. Forever 21 and the area in front of New Leaf Market, there are no more marks.
There used to be, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 3 weeks ago they were there. I mean, one of the advantages of these marks that was pointed out, and properly so, by Don Lane, that Mayor Don Lane, that they did create some new spaces that you could be in next to a building. Not many. I'd say
right.
two, maybe three. I've not found the third one. One is near Forever 21. One is near New Leaf. Maybe there's a third one somewhere. And they also created a new space or two near the intersections. The sidewalk is broad at certain of the side streets, and you
right.
can sit. But that would have been illegal under the
current old law.
And the old law will return into effect probably in June. Because that is when this law expires, unless the city council votes. Now, Lane has said, I think mistakenly, that'll be coming up in August. But
how they work, Robert?
It's not my recollection of the law.
They had to grant this reform because of the great Marconi and everything. But the way they did it, so the marks wash away in the rain, the law expires without anybody doing anything, and then you'll be busted again. It's fucking bullshit. You know, they should make all their laws expire like that, but they don't. They only do that for laws they don't want it. They didn't want to do this. They didn't want to put those marks on the ground, right? It's obvious, right?
Well, remember, this was a proposal put together by Don Lane and Pamela Comstock. And Comstock, interestingly enough, was one of the few people who proposed. She's the person who proposed. The SEIU, as you may remember, they had a massive protest and were arrested at City Council two nights ago.
I heard about that. Yeah.
And I just reviewed it, and they were shouting, more decent wages. I'm not sure what their chant was. And the city council did not resume for half an hour. I mean, they took 15 minutes to clear the room and 15 minutes to arrest them, and they're facing charges of disrupting a meeting.
Is this going to disappear from the city website?
Yeah, well, it's there now for those who want to look at
it.
Yeah, it's up.
Okay.
It's up. You can see it.
Now, which workers are these?
These are, Jeff Smedberg, who's, I've never had a lot of regard for SEIU because I felt first of all, they voted to support the sleeping ban. They had a debate about it back in 10 years ago, and they supported it because they thought some of their workers are parks and rec workers, and they talked about the need for the sleeping ban. I didn't.
So this is the general union for all the workers.
I believe so. Yeah, all the county workers. I don't want to swear to that.
Who's getting screwed here? I would assume it's just the temporary workers, like Skidmark or something, that don't have all the benefits. I imagine.
Well, their concern here is that it's a small drop in the per hour pay that they that I remember hearing them one of the speakers talk about. There may be other cutbacks in health insurance or something. I'm not sure. I'm speculating
Does
there.
Does this affect Shoemaker and people like that? That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, they're managers. I don't think that they're not. Okay. I don't think they're SEIU. I don't think they're SEIU, but I don't know for sure.
The pigs are all got their own union.
And
the
I don't think the police are SEIU either. I think they are. You know, they're something else.
They have a better union.
So
win.
There was they stood their ground. They got arrested. I doubt, and they disrupted the meeting. There's no question about it. That was their intention. That's what they did. And good for them for doing it. You know, for raising these issues. Frankly, and will they be charged along with the Highway 6 and the Monterey 8? I don't know, but you know they're pretty. Some of them are at least. Jeff Smedberg is an individual who's these are. Union officials, for all I know, but there were six of them, or five or six, and they were all linking arms, standing in front of the city council. So I'm getting a little far afield here. Let me get back to what we were doing here, and here's some more of this. Because in about 15 minutes, I'm expecting Courtney Hansen to come in, and we're going to be playing this interview with Rebecca Mills, who is a woman who's been held in jail. Without bail for a year now, awaiting trial in the Santa Cruz County Jail.
What charge?
And they, some burglary charge. And the reason that they're doing that is they ruled she was incompetent. You can hear her talking and to judge of yourself whether she was incompetent. Once she was sent off to a mental hospital or a mental ward and someplace I've never heard of in California, they immediately sent her back, said, no, she doesn't need to be here.
Right.
But they're stalling and delaying because she does not like her public defender. Her public defender wants her to do a deal, and she refuses. She's not guilty, she says, of these charges, and she wants her day in court. And she talks about the inside of the jail and so forth. We're going to be talking to her shortly, or I should say listening to her, because this is a tape. You'll hear me talking. And Courtney, who's doing the Sin Baris protests, and most recently the protests against solitary confinement that are happening on the 23rd of every month, she'll be in there to talk about the Santa Cruz County Jail. Sin Baris is one of the few organizations that actually discusses local abuses. I mean, you can get Simba Kenyatta will go on and on and on about his history and general discrimination against African Americans, and even the experiences of his friends and people in Santa Cruz. But you can't get him to name a cop that is a bad cop or an institution in Santa Cruz that needs to be changed. All you'll hear is the same old rhetoric about a police review board, which
Why don't we just do one?
Well, we did one already.
No, I mean ourselves, like Free Radio Police Review.
Well, that, I think, is the only kind...
This is political.
That's the only... The answer to that is, it's a good idea, when the but what it really means is mobilizing the community.
Right.
It means getting the community angry the way it happened in Baltimore, the way it happened in Ferguson, the way it happens in Oakland, the way it happens in cities where people get fed up with these verdicts that exonerate killers in blue. And not just because it's unjust in any particular case, but because it gives the green light for this ongoing... ongoing murder situation that is then called officer safety or some horseshit of that sort. So what you need, the trouble is every time you, why should the community have to mobilize again and again to deal with an elitist bunch of thugs dressed up in uniforms playing public safety officers? And that to me is the issue, and the real issue has to do with the institution of the police department itself. And that, of course, has to do with hierarchies and authority in our society, and it has to do with their origin. It's also about money.
It's protecting the moneyed interest.
And it's about class warfare.
That's exactly what it's about.
And there,
class warfare more than anything.
And there are issues that have to be dealt with in new and creative ways where people begin to understand that their interests do involve and are worth getting involved in this kind of deeper struggle. And, it's hard for people to give up their privileges. Like myself, I don't want to give up privileges that I have, Police aren't after me most of the time, unless I step over the line here or there, because they know that I tend to, get cranky and public about it. And that isn't something that...
And you got attorneys that show up.
And sometimes I've got attorneys that show up. That doesn't happen all the time, unfortunately. Anyway, let's continue some of this and see what we got here.
They don't do it here, as far as I know.
I'm here.
You're the only one. Congratulations.
I can draft some people.
All right. Well, that'll be great.
That'll be good.
Okay, thanks.
All right, well, good luck, Phil. Thank you.
I'm a member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm not a member yet. So I can't have a voting yet.
Bathroom issues for lack of bathrooms for homeless people.
I was just talking to Martine Bernal, city manager.
Robert, where is it? The one that's in front street there. And you know, the city contracted.
And again, this is we're sort of nibbling at these teeny tiny issues, getting lost in what Elise Casby calls a kind of a whole series of loops and traps and details that abusers traditionally use to further abuse the people that they want to abuse. You know, if you spend your time arguing over the details of the sleeping ban or the details of the sitting ban or the details of the porta potties, these are sort of, you know, minutiae that are a part of the bigger picture and illustrate the bigger picture if you want to see it, but don't go to the heart of the picture.
Right.
And what you're going to hear now is Phil Posner, again, concerned about the rights of homeless with his Camp of Last Resort. Their most recent thing has been the move by Brent Adams and Steve Plaich independently. They don't seem to be liking each other too much these days, these guys. Yeah, activists get each other's nerves. You know, and
neither am I, you, Robert.
And you can't be popular with everyone. What are you going to do? They are both pushing for... Well, Brenda's established what's called the Bathroom Task Force, and Plaich and Posner, the younger Posner, Micah Posner, the council member, as distinguished from Phil Posner, you're hearing, who's the father and the rabbi and guy who's pushing for this somewhat more militant Camp of Last Resort. All, again, it's much like the concentration camp of last resort, as unfortunately how some view it or how it seems to be. You know, if you try to cater to the police, and what do you want? Searchlights and guard dogs, and he doesn't talk about that, of course, and he doesn't want that. But you'll hear him talking, you'll hear Phil Posner talking about, well, we can make sure people don't vandalize the porta potties by putting in cameras so that people will be observed. You know, so in other words, you can destroy people's privacy and dignity in order to pander to mythologies that somehow we can't provide services because these people are too primitive. It's like, you know, arguments about blacks. They would not appreciate going to college. Right. They don't need to go to college, you know. They're too animalistic, you know.
Dirty,
and these people will vandalize a bathroom. Yeah. This has been tried before. That's what Martine Bernal was saying. You'll hear him saying that.
Atkins said it was impossible. It would get vandalized.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I mean, bathrooms get vandalized, but they generally get vandalized by, you know, upper white privileged drunks who come out of the bars or vandalize the bar bathrooms. I mean, again, I don't know.
I
speculate on that, you know, but I wonder if that and the crowd out at the boardwalk and the crowd of students isn't a much larger group than homeless people who are, of course, improperly and, toxically classified as the other. The alien group, the group to be feared, the group in the forest, the group
the Jews,
that's lurking.
The
new Jews, so to speak. And that was another thing, by the way, that happened at City Council, which I may play on Sunday. Pat Kittle, or sometimes I call him Cat Piddle. Pat, frankly, though I criticize his views on immigration and his support for the sleeping ban because he says it's necessary to protect the environment. Yeah. I've had him on the show. He tried to get a show, as you know, free with free radio, and he was
to get him a show, even if he is racist.
And he is, you know, he's a racist in his view. At least that's my view of Pat. And he also apparently, I didn't hear last 2 weeks ago, but he apparently made some comments about Jews that really upset the city council. So this time, when he came up to the oral communication, I should really play it, but I will be playing it on Sunday probably. There's no time to do it today. But, you know, he made the statement, I think he was attacking the notion of diversity to try to show how ridiculous it is that you want to get different, you know, put people in, have equal representation of different groups, which I don't think is ridiculous, although I think that politically correct rigidity around these issues can be ridiculous, and terminology can become politically correct and ridiculous. But he said, if you really care about diversity, then why don't you recognize that Jews are overrepresented on city council and in certain professions? And instead of saying, my response to that is, show me the stats and let's look at it and see what your argument is. You know, is a particular group getting especially favorable treatment to the disadvantage of other groups. That's a real issue, whether you're Jewish or non-Jewish. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and I don't know the answer. I've not researched it. I'm come from a Jewish background myself, mm-hmm. so you know, I'm probably
you've got high priest blood in you.
For heaven's sake, it's new to me. But in any case, you know, what did the city council do? They said. Lane came up with this new formula he's using at the oral communications period, and he said, I will interrupt you if you have statements that are disparaging or inappropriate or break decorum, and then I will warn you not to do that, and then I will allow you to have the rest of your speech to say whatever you want. But I warn you, city council members will be allowed to respond, and they may respond at length. Which, of course, we've always wanted. So good for Pat Kittle. You know, thank you, Pat. And so Pat, you know, made his comment. He said, you know, I'd like to know this diversity stuff. You know, I simply ask a simple question: are Jews overrepresented in these positions, or something to that effect? And frankly, it's not to me an unreal, a bad question. It doesn't necessarily show you're anti-Semitic. But all they could say was, "You're anti," and they, of course, they went through this. Lane interrupted him, and then let him finish. And then I had a police officer escort him out when he attempted to do a dialogue with the council. But Micah Posner was saying, oh, this has caused hatred throughout the world, and this has been, Rochelle Naroyan made some protests. Oh, well, I'm really glad you adopted these new rules because I think it's really horrible and so forth. And nobody addressed the substance of what he was saying. And Micah's, and of course his last statement as he was dragged out was, if you want to see who's really in power, see about the people they won't let you talk about. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting. For those who are anti...
That's like Nazi propaganda, too, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It is Nazi propaganda, too. But but unless you can address that issue fairly and say, okay, here are the stats. Let's see if they mean anything. If you're afraid to even look at the stats...
Do you think it's true?
I have no idea. I've not looked at...
You deal with city council all the time.
But I don't know. I don't look into... There are a few, but I don't look into their backgrounds. I don't know what their percentages are. I know that there's discrimination against blacks. I know there's discrimination against homeless people. We've documented that by
right.
going at the
yes.
figures.
Yes.
Do Jews have a favorite? Do they have a favoritist position at the city council? No idea.
Against in this country.
Right. There were quotas that restricted Jews, and there were covenants that restricted people from getting housing because they were Jewish. Nowadays, I mean, one of Kittle's big deals is he's concerned about Israeli aggression in the
right,
Middle East.
Right.
Properly so, in my view. And, you know, it's dismissed by some as anti-Semitic.
I went to a Palestinian protest, and all the other protesters moved away from him because of his sign was, you know, inflammatory.
Right, because, I mean, and Kittle, you know, he's, I suppose Lane is to be commended for saying, you can say whatever you want at the council. A part of it has to do with a lawsuit that a certain individual did with a Nazi salute, and it cost the city $200,000.
I'll be talking about that soon. Myself. We'll do a puck of pigs on that one.
Anyway, so let's hear a little more, because very soon we're going to have a guest, and I hope, and we'll go into the jails and hear a little bit what's happening in the Santa Cruz County jails. That should be happening shortly, but let's hear a little more here from... Again, this is the Public Works Fair a week ago on Wednesday when the streets between Cedar and Chestnut on Lincoln Street for a block was blocked off, and we... here you're going to hear Phil Posner, the father of the council member, concerned about establishing this camp of last resort, and is here talking about the bathrooms. Why can't we have some bathrooms open? Talking about this with Martine Brunel. And you're going to...
Santa Cruz is a town that can't run a bathroom.
Apparently. Let's hear some.
It's to be open for it to be cleaned 3 days a week, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous. I mean, Mike and I are actually considering...
What we just missed was the fact that Posner was saying, and this was also brought up by Brent Adams night before last at City Council, who was given special presentation time by Don Lane, that the bathrooms in the garages and in the parks are cleaned every few hours, or several times a day at least, whereas the what I call it the Posner porta potty, which is the little porta potty that was put in at Laurel and Front.
Two.
and Laurel and Front Street.
Pamela, too.
And with
that.
Pamela Comstock as well. And
Huff. That's actually the Huff porta potty.
In any case, that this one is filthy because it's only cleaned 3 days a week. And more important than that, it's not cleaned on holidays. So on Friday, you might not get another next cleaning until Wednesday if there's a holiday on Monday. That's a real issue for him, and that's what he's talking about. And Brent pointed out that there are people who are willing to clean it. There's another company that's willing to clean it. You'll hear Martine Brunel giving another perspective, claiming that there isn't such a thing. But let's see. I think we have a caller. Hey there, caller. You're on free radio.
I am. The Huff Porta Potty, initiated by one of the members of Huff, I think, who you're speaking with, also serves a Kaiser Permanente crowd that comes out from the Warriors Stadium. So would that be why they put it right on the Front Street side?
You got me, man. Oh, that's quite a, you know, that's quite possible. I mean, I, as you remember, I was an opponent of the Posner Porta Potty, and the Huff generally supported it.
I understand that all the restrooms are way at the back of the Warriors Stadium, so that when people come out, they crowd into the porta potties looking for some kind of relief.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
your opinion.
I think
and that parking lot is for the Warriors too.
I think there are a bunch of porta potties around the stadium during times of I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've never. The only time I was in the stadium was Project Homeless Connect, and then I saw porta potties galore around there. So I don't know whether that's normal for stadium activity. You might call her. I don't know.
It's a little bit hard to hear the co-host too. The microphone's imbalance, I think, a little bit.
All right, I will try to...
That's a Robert thing.
Balance comment. not really.
I would turn
anything else, caller? Okay.
I'll think of something. No, not right now.
All right, call back if you want. All right, so let's hear some of the discussion. As Martine Brunel, who's the $200,000 plus executive, can't put in a, can't pay for the staff to open up a goddamn bathroom at night. They don't even have to build one. They just have to open one at night. Open the bathroom in the park, open the bathroom
what
in the...
What about his lawn?
And indeed, there's some who've talked about a shit-in at the city council. And that, I don't know. It's a smelly situation. The whole thing stinks, I'll tell you.
We've already volunteered to go clean it.
Yeah. The problem we have is that there's no sanitation company that's willing to do any more than what they've done. In fact,
the contract that...
And Brent publicly stated before the city council that this was not true. He had specifically gone to a company and found that they could, in fact, that they would, in fact, take cleaning on the days that the current company won't do. So Brunel is either not up to date, or Brent is wrong, somebody's, or they don't give a shit about the shitters.
The company contracted with.
Yes, no local contractor wanted to do it at all. So we actually had to get somebody from out of town. So that one is managed, maintained by an out-of-town contractor who is doing as much as they...
Three times a week.
Yeah, they will not do any more. And no local contractor was willing to do it at all. That was our challenge.
Do you have a suggestion?
I don't have a problem with doing more. I think it would be great.
Do you have a suggestion?
We'll see if Brunel actually doesn't have a problem, because if Brent Adams is correct, the group called the Universal Poo-Poo Cleaners, I'm not sure what they are, can actually, is actually, he stated they will come in and take up the slack if they're paid to do it. So, Martine, it's time to get off the pot and do something about this.
Well, unless we can find somebody else to provide, extra service, that would be great, but we can't make people do it.
Why can't the city demand that its employees do it?
We don't, we don't have, facilities to do that stuff.
People clean the bathrooms, the other bathroom.
Yeah, but that's a portable one, so that requires taping it and dumping it and all that sort of thing.
Martine has a lot of reasonable comments that simply aren't true. For instance, this latest comment, it's true in a certain sense. Yes, it's true that it requires, hey, welcome, Courtney. It's true that in the sense that you have to dump porta potties and clean them in ways that are different than cleaning bathrooms. But the most recent drive by Brent Adams and Phil and Steve in their own way, and Micah, is to, it's not that they need, you need to dump the porta potties more often, it's just you need to go in and clean the area. You know, clean the seats, clean the area, provide toilet paper, do the kind of stuff that could be done fairly easily. So Bernal is either not aware of this, or, as I said before, doesn't give a shit. That seems to be the problem there.
That's a little different. So we'd have to build a more permanent restroom, which might be something to do, to look at.
Why not open?
That's ridiculous. You have bathrooms that are open. They're all over the place. You have a bathroom in San Lorenzo Park. You have a bathroom in, all the parking garage, the number of them. You have bathrooms that are available to be kept open at night. And, of course, Bernal is ignoring these facts as he blithely gives you all his reasons why they can't do anything else and let people, you know, drown in shit. I mean,
right.
That
was a complaint against Occupy, too, is that we didn't have, you know, porta potties, and so there was shit all over, so we were a public nuisance. So that means the whole fucking city of Santa Cruz is a public nuisance.
And there you have it. So, let's hear a little more, and then I will introduce our guest, who's arrived on time and ready to roll, examining her notes, and we'll get into the interview with Rebecca Mills at the Santa Cruz County Jail, and Sinbaris and what they're up to and what's going on in the jails and all that kind of thing.
In the Parks bathrooms at night.
Thanks for talking.
The Parks, the which ones?
San Lorenzo Park bathroom at night, a garage bathroom at night.
Oh,
they already exist.
Yeah, I mean, the problems on those have been that they just have gotten destroyed at night. So we'd have to find a way to... And I don't think anybody's opposed to keeping them open so long as they are not destroyed. Because what would happen before is they would get destroyed, and then they'd have to be closed for days. So that's our challenge. How do we do it in a way...
Does a camera show for that, by the way, if there's a camera in there?
Here you have Bernal raising actually a false issue. I've never heard of a bathroom being destroyed. I've heard of the porta potties that were put in 15 years ago being eventually, you know, suffering, you know, overuse or misuse, and you know, there was problems and things that happened there. But his claim that the bathrooms were destroyed, I asked for documentation. I said, you know, what I may have to do, if I ever want to get around to it, is to do a Public Records Act to find out if there is an indication of this in the records. Go ahead.
Well, I'm always using the public bathrooms, and there is vandalism and destruction of, you know, various...
Obviously, you find that is the case.
That is the case. However, they put guards fucking everywhere in this town all the time. Why don't they just have a bathroom with a guard on it? Is that so difficult? And then they can get some more money to one of their buddies for and a pension and everything. You know, isn't that the solution
fact,
that would work
that's
in this
what
town?
They were doing in San Diego back in 1998 or thereabouts when I visited the city there with activist Becky Johnson. We found that a hunger strike by a now dead activist, Larry, resulted in their opening up a public bathroom for a 24-hour bathroom. You know, it's pretty obvious. It's pretty basic. It shows you how deeply ingrained the prejudice are against poor people and the determination to avoid public services. And that is just sad. Sad and maddening as well. So I think we're going to continue this bathroom examination on Sunday when we don't have to subject our guest to it. I'm going to make a note of how far we've gotten here. Anyway, let's have a musical break, and I'll be right back with something that's a little more less smelly, or maybe not less smelly. It probably stinks just as much, frankly, but we'll see.
About people in a foreign land. She pointed her finger. Oh, she said to me. Oh, she said to me. There's people. cold, hungry over there. Some people laughed. Oh, when they saw her face. But I cried. Oh, I cried, cried. When I saw her smile. She got a toothbrush.
So music. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. We need a transmitter site. Please give a call because we will be going off the air as soon as they foreclose on the property that the transmitter is currently located on, which they actually already have. They're just waiting for the banks to take the final gulp. And it's an important issue. Get in touch with us at freakradio.org on the web, or give me a call on the Huff line at 423-4833. We're also looking for studio space because the place we're in is changing management, and we may be losing our studio area. And that can happen probably in the next 3 weeks. We'll see if it happens. If it doesn't,
You've got to get notice 60 days.
And I'm told by Free Week.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll see. But it's whatever the situation is, we need a new place. And we need these options. And if you want to hear more of this, then help out. In the studio with me is Courtney Hansen, Scene Bar's activist. Hello, Courtney.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
And you certainly came right in with a whiff of poo as we discussed the porta-potties.
For now.
And I know that's not the subject you came in to discuss, but you made some comments that I felt were quite right on. I think, Steve Plage tried to get me to sign up to clean the porta-potty once a day, and I guess Brent's trying to do the same. And Micah apparently pissed off Brent by not agreeing to do it more regularly. But this, I think you said what I thought is quite to the point, which is this is not the job of of activists to go clean a porta potty. Not because it's not manual labor is beneath us, but the city pays workers to do this kind of stuff for middle class people. But I see homeless people don't deserve to have a clean porta potty, or people who are up late don't deserve to have a clean porta potty. Was that your point?
Yeah, and I think there's multiple parts to it. I mean, people need jobs, so what a great job creation opportunity if that's what needs to happen. And I do think it is admirable that people take things into their own hands, and not because that is going to be the avenue of social change, but it does highlight how simply the problem could be fixed. And so I do think it is important work, and it's admirable that an individual would take that on. Someone has to do it. But the point, hopefully, is to highlight the broader issue that systemic change needs to happen, not, teams of activists that are willing to clean up after the city and
do the public's job for them.
And do the things that our tax dollars are supposed to be paying for, and that would systemically benefit everybody if our money went to that. It's more jobs. it's more, you know, health and sanitation, if that's what Bernal cares about, which is interesting because the city only cares about health and sanitation when they make it illegal to dumpster dive because, you know, food is bad for people, apparently, if it doesn't have capitalism's value.
Or attempt to criminalize food, not bombs, as they have in other cities and have tried to do here as well 20 years ago, not so much recently.
Or break up the Occupy camp because it's not sanitary.
Or
and
throw all their stuff away because it's not sanitary.
Yeah. So that is not what I came to talk about, but I caught the end of it, so I think it's a really important topic as well.
And I do hear when I'm online, you know, and I hear people attacking an attempt to, let's say, end the sleeping ban or establish, you know, place, you know, open up, recognize vacant buildings are being held for real estate profiteering purposes, and that they need to be, we need to have a real estate transfer tax or something that stops this kind of profiteering when people have no place to be and are losing their homes and through foreclosures and health costs. And you'll hear them, people say, why don't you take these people into your own house? Yeah, you know, why don't you put them up yourself? And the answer, of course, is it's like asking people in the 30s, well, why don't you help these old people yourself? We don't need no Social Security. Take care of your own old people. It's really very simple. And because of the economic system, it's not really very simple at all.
Yeah, and really it should be the state's job and the government's job to take care of those things, and the government seems to have plenty of time and resources when it comes to things like policing and
foreign wars.
I mean that's a large conversation, but I'm even talking very, very locally about Santa Cruz and that, you know, acquisition of the Bearcat and all of these pieces to that story. So it's, I think, individuals taking it upon themselves, you know, that could create a community, something like Occupy or something like the Food Not Bombs anniversary that just happened, which is really beautiful and shows, you know, how simply we could build something different.
Yeah, they had showers there, haircuts.
Food people could take away, hot meal people could eat, literature, political education, I mean, all that good stuff.
Hugs. Well,
yeah, if you want a hug, probably.
Well, what I can, is there something, I'm about to play Rebecca Mills' account to me this morning of what's happened to her in jail. But before I do, is there some remarks you want to make?
I haven't heard it yet, so that would be wonderful. I've been in touch with Rebecca for the past maybe almost 2 months, and her friend, who is not incarcerated, called me. I guess he found my phone number on a press release from Simbares on the internet, and he just said, I don't know what I'm doing, and I just really need some support, and I'm trying to help my friend out, and the lines in the nonprofit seem really long, and it kind of feels like take a number, and I don't think anything positive is going to actually happen for her. So we met up the next day, talked about her case, and she calls me every few days. We've written a couple letters, and I plan to start visiting her as well. But I'm sure she'll tell you much more about her situation. She's been in the jail on pre-trial without any conviction since June 2014.
Yeah, I remember. Well, let's see if this recording actually works. I think it does. Let's hope it does. And let's hear what we can catch. I actually didn't know who it was, although I remembered you had mentioned her before. And so I quickly learned who it was. Rebecca?
Yeah, is this Robert?
Yeah, Rebecca, who are you? Remind me.
I've never talked to you before. I got your contact information from Courtney Hansen.
Gotcha.
I've been in touch with her, and she... I finally got some stuff in the mail from her that had been delayed for a while. Anyway, she had, I guess, talked to you about being interested. She told me you do a radio show, and you were looking for to interview people who might want to interview me.
Dig it. Yeah, sure. What are you in for?
Well, my charges are stupid. Burglary, criminal threats, and resisting arrest, which they're trying to offer me a deal. I'm not going to take it because I don't think the evidence supports this. I want to be found not guilty, you know, and the only way to do that is to either have them drop charges, which they can refile, or go to trial and have good legal representation and have people actually find you not guilty. Anyway.
What's the bail?
$100,000, which is ridiculous, and my public defender has done nothing to get it reduced. It's supposed to be, the scale is 25, but because the police who arrested me were upset with me, they called on the way to the jail and got it raised.
Who are the cops?
Who were the cops who arrested you?
His Idaho sheriff, his trainee, David Arbizano, and his supervisor, Randall Hopp.
Can you spell their last names?
Hopp, H-O-P, and Ragusano, R-A-G-U-S-A-N-O. They called a bunch of other people in on the call, but they were the ones who took me into custody.
Are you comfortable talking about the circumstances of the arrest, or would that compromise your case?
I can talk about it. So can you tell me exactly what your program is and what you're trying to do with your program? Or, right?
Yeah, I can do that. I do a show twice a week, total of 5.5 hours, concerned mostly about poor and homeless folks, civil rights violations against them, but also conditions in the jail and in the courts.
Okay.
That involve abuses, and with the police department and the deputies, involve abuses against the community generally. So that's
right.
Sort of my focus.
Okay. Well, I was arrested. My neighbors called to get me arrested, and, I was arrested out of my home. I was my doctor's, actually. I wasn't homeless, but now I am. I don't know. I mean, I can talk about some things. There are certain things I don't want to discuss because, that's something that might be prejudicial.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you been in jail for how long?
I was arrested June 25th, so I've been in custody since then. The reason it's taking so long and nothing happened on my case is because I tried to get my public defender replaced, and the judge wouldn't allow me to do that and decided that I needed to be examined for competency to stand trial. And then, based on a bunch of bullshit in this psychologist report that wasn't even true that I didn't get to see, I was found incompetent to stand trial. And then, so what they do with that is they send you down to the state hospital to restore your competency. And so that happened. As soon as I talked to them, they were like, she understands her case. She's, seems to be able to talk to us. I don't see any reason why she wouldn't be able to stand trial, which was the case the whole time, Anyway, so I got sent back right away, which they weren't expecting. And then I held in there because my public defender was supposed to file this motion to dismiss, which she originally said had a good chance of succeeding. And, it finally got heard at the beginning of April and got rejected. And she's refused to, do anything to investigate, to provide me any kind of substantive defense. She hasn't even shown me the evidence that's available. Like, she promised she would, and then she didn't. Goodness. And then she's trying to, pressure me to take a deal so that I'm out of her life. And I'm like, well, from the start, I've been saying I'm not guilty and I think I need a jury trial, And she can't keep track of things. She filed in her motion to dismiss. She claimed that, the criminal defense thing is my neighbors claimed, and this is total BS, that I said I was going to stick a pool cue up their butt. Okay, right? Are you following me so far?
I am.
Okay, so she claimed in her motion to dismiss that there was no pool cue around. Well, there was. It never left my apartment, but it was booked into evidence. And she's so not on top of the facts of anything that she, she basically blatantly lied, and she's been doing to me just because she's not on top of the facts and stuff, and she'll just say things without knowing whether they're true or not, but she did that to the court. Well, that's not enough to get her replaced either. So once again, what do they do, right? Because she's unwilling to work with me to provide a real defense, so I'm the one who's incompetent to stand trial again.
What is the name? What's the name of your public defender, Rebecca?
She's Amy with A-I-M-E-E, last name Buenteo, which B-U is Hispanic, I guess, B-U-E-N-T-E-L-L-O.
And the name of the judge who decided you were needed a competency hearing?
Timothy Volkman.
And when did this happen? How long ago?
This most recent one was the day of my, the day that the motion to dismiss was thrown out is when I got sent. That was heard in front of Judge Salazar, and for whatever reason, he didn't justify it, but he's just like, I'm not going to dismiss the charges. Anyway, and then I was saying, well, I still need a competent attorney. He's like, well, we'll send you back to Volkman. So then I went to Volkman that same day, which is like the beginning of April. It's like April 3rd. And he was like, oh, well, I'm not going to, I've been submitting written statements, which are like my constitutional rights have been violated. You know, I have a right to a speedy trial. I have a right to competent counsel. I have a right to this. I believe Judge Wilson's biased. I think that instead of him just claiming he's not, it needs to be heard according to the rules of court in front of another judge, all this stuff, which he doesn't want to deal with, right? And so that's when he declared a doubt as to my competency, right? And then that was actually heard on the 29th, I think, of April. And then a week later, on May 6th, once he's been found incompetent, which it was based on these reports that I never had a chance to see that are just total BS. Anyway, so then a week later, they have to, once you've been found incompetent, see if they can place you in the community, which apparently they never can, but it's kind of a formality they have to do according to the law. So that report was received, and then that same day, based on these same reports that I never had a chance to see, they said, oh, yeah, and also, you know, there's an order for Ms. Mills to receive involuntary psychiatric medication to restore her competency, you know.
Have you been involuntarily medicated or not?
No, because, so that's what, I mean, they don't, of course, explain anything. So then I had to work with people here to find out if that was something. No, this is not qualified. This jail is not qualified as a treatment facility. And those medications can only be provided at a treatment facility. And apparently there's only like one jail in California, or that's what they told me, that qualifies like Napa or something as a treatment facility. So that would not happen until I go down to Patton, the state hospital where, you know, the court has ordered me to be sent. And then if those people, you know, decide that that's necessary, appropriate, whatever, you know, then they're allowed to do that unless I can get this, you know, I could file a writ of habeas corpus, I guess, to get this looked at and examined to try to straighten it out, but it's kind of difficult to do that from within here. So I'm trying to get that processed so that at least I have a chance of getting this stuff reversed. There's so many violations that have happened along the way that that's just the latest one, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you written a chronology of this and gotten it to?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I'm working on a bunch of different. I mean, as far as because there's while I've been in jail, I've been subjected to kind of abusive treatment here as well, and I've had health problems. I had health problems coming in. I wasn't accepted directly from they referred me to the ER the day I was arrested, right? And then, you know, I was discharged from there and sent back less than 24 hours later. And then, I mean, so there's this whole medical thing that happened that, you know, wasn't dealt with properly. And then I also have a history of back problems, and I had a flare-up of that. I, in the past, had a surgery for degenerative disc disease for herniated disc. And I had, like, a flare-up of that where I was in, like, extreme pain, and they weren't prescribing me even ibuprofen, you know. And thankfully that resolved. I was in, like, pain, like, for a month without getting them even acknowledging that I had a valid issue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that whole thing, whatever. And then, anyway, so I've been subjected to some, like, mistreatment in jail. So I had this whole timeline for that. I finally managed to get my records from medical. But then, as far as the court stuff, I have, like, all my statements from court that I've submitted since I've been back, which is in December. I have all the minute orders I got. I requested specific ones because I needed them for something else, but they gave me all the minute orders since Ms. Fuenteo started representing me. And then I have notes, which I'm trying to collate as far as me leaving messages generally or sometimes speaking with her directly in her office and how she's been very dismissive and not addressed my needs or concerns. So I have to, like, bring those together to figure out exactly what happened when, because those are, like, written interspersed with other things. Does that make sense?
So, Rebecca, how long have you been in jail total time?
Well, so I was arrested June 25th, and then I was sent down to Patton for less than 2 weeks, so I was in custody the whole time, but as far as this particular jail, it would have been the time from June 25th, 2014, to now, minus, like, 2 weeks. So do the math, we're at the end of May, so 11 months minus 10 and a half months, give or take.
So you requested a speedy trial, which you have a right to within 30 days if you're incarcerated. And
well, so when they find you incompetent and stand trial, then that goes on hold.
Are you still an incompetency label or not?
Yeah, so that was applied April 29th. So I don't have access to any outside medical people, to provide an opinion to restore my competency right now. So generally speaking, the default thing is to get sent down to the state hospital and have them file reports to hear to say, like, what happened last time. And they talked to me, you know, and then they filed that report right away. And then according to the state law, the county has to start paying for people to stay if they don't take you back within 10 days of that being sent. So they took me back on the 10th day.
Of course, of course. So have you had much communication with anybody outside the jail?
Have I had communication with anybody?
With many people outside the jail.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the people I've been in... Well, okay, so I have a website, I have a blog, that I used to be a web developer, so a friend of mine set that up for me, and I've been trying to get it populated with content. You know, I've been in contact with family, but they're kind of part of the reason that I got arrested in the first place, so they've been less than helpful. And, you know, I've been in contact with... I'm not from Santa Cruz, okay? I moved to Santa Cruz September 2012 to study math at UCSC, and then I started studying massage as well, like, you know, the following fall, I think, at Twin Lakes College of the Healing Arts, which is now out of business, shortly before my arrest. Anyway, due to financial mismanagement. But anyway, so I have a friend from there that's been in touch with me who's been coming to visit me here. And then I recently got in touch with another fellow student from there, and also someone who is a student with me, a regular, you know, degree-seeking student at UCSC. I was looking at maybe, I have a bachelor's degree in economics, which I got back in the day, in 97. And then I was thinking of, you know, teaching math at, like, a college level. So I was doing preparatory work to enroll in a degree program, like a master's program. So I was taking all, like, the upper-level undergraduate math courses at SC. Anyway,
so what is Rebecca? What's your website?
It's rebeccamills.org. It's my name is spelled like the King James Bible, so it's R-E-B-E-K-A-H, and then Mills, M-I-L-L-S. And since I have to send things out and then ask people to post them, I don't know what's up there right now. I'm working on getting more stuff out because just specifically my priority right now is my statement to the court, which has been completely ignored. Which, you know, I'm requesting that my constitutional rights be respected, and they're not. You know, I'm requesting that the letter of the law be followed, which it hasn't been, you know. And those are just completely ignored whenever I appear in court, you know. Anyway, or the judge has made claims, you know, oh, yeah, I'll hear, you know, because I'm, you know, saying, okay, the rules of court say that if there's a doubt as to the bias of a judge, that that's
1 minute remaining
in front of another judge, and he's like, oh, I'll do that next time. Oh, next time he didn't do that because he declared me doubt to my competency.
Rebecca, how is you're paying for this yourself, for these calls?
Yeah, it's not that expensive to call locally. Do you want me to call you back?
No, I'm fine. I'm looking up your website as we speak, so I can tell you what's on it in a moment.
Yeah, that would be good to know. Guy that was my study buddy in some math classes, he's willing, you know, he's an underemployed recent graduate, so he has time on his hands. Problem I've had is that most of my friends are really busy people with busy professional lives, you know? And also because I've been in, you know, administrative segregation for most of the time here, I haven't had good access to the phone or, you know, communications. So it's difficult to get people to even know what's going on to be able to help me.
Why have you been in administrative segregation?
Because, number one, I was under this cloud of psychiatric bullshit. And then, number two, I didn't get along with some of these long-term inmates that are bullies that are allowed to run things, and or some of the staff.
Thank you for using IC.
And that's the first half of an interview with Rebecca Mills recorded earlier today. Any thoughts, Courtney?
Yeah, and then before I forget, that half and the second half, is that available anywhere? I saw you typing up some notes. But she did call you back, and you continue to talk?
Well, we'll be playing it soon.
Oh.
If you want to hear it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I know your show goes till 8, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Rebecca's case brings up a lot of things, and I feel like, you know, 2/3 of the people in our local county jail are in there on pretrial, meaning they have never been convicted of anything. They have not stood trial. They're sitting in jail pretty much because they can't pay bail. I actually think it's a really bright idea that we consider abolishing bail altogether. An incredible article recently came out that people can read about this by Maya Shenhwar called Too Many People in Jail, Abolish Bail in the New York Times.
How do you spell Shenhwar?
Shenhwar is S-C-H-E-N-W-A-R. But yeah, Rebecca's case, sitting there for pre-trial for a whole year, and then having her mental health, I think, kind of used against her, and jails and courts use that the way they want to. Just to give people an example, another person I'm in touch with named Ricky, who's in Kern Valley State Prison, he is incarcerated due to three strikes law. He has severe mental health challenges, and through his crimes never did anything violent, never hurt anyone, but he never received a competency hearing despite the fact that the judge admitted that he was supposed to get one, and they kind of just skipped over it and sentenced him, and now he's in prison. He's been there for many, many years. He could be there forever. So he never received a competency hearing. If he had received a competency hearing, his entire trial outcome could have been different, and he might not be locked up right now. And then you have people like Rebecca, who are having their mental health used against them, and they're saying that she's not fit to stand trial when she's actually, as you can tell, very fired up. She's very articulate. She's very aware of her situation. She's never seen evidence that's being used against her. I understand also that public defenders are kind of systemically extremely overworked, but I have not been in touch with this woman yet that's her public defender, but in Santa Cruz County, public defenders are appointed by the court through a couple of private firms. And obviously, attorneys appointed by the courts are paid very little, especially for misdemeanor matters. And there's not much motivation to take on additional work. And Rebecca sounds like someone who isn't kind of letting the machine operate as it usually does. She's fighting her case. She's not going to plead guilty to something she didn't do and something that she's not even presented evidence with.
She got a felony charge together?
I'm not clear. I think one of them is a burglary charge, and one of them is, although I'm not quite sure what the initial charge is. Resisting arrest was the second charge.
Resisting arrest, threats of criminal intent. She mentioned waving a pool cue at a neighbor, saying something vulgar, which it sounds like, you know, from her telling of the story, that it didn't happen that way. In any event, the facts of the case are that she never harmed anybody or came close to harming anybody. And somehow, through individual police officers' frustrations in dealing with her case, they ramped up her bail to $100,000, which means to get out, she would have to pay $10,000, which is absolutely ridiculous.
I know that in our smaller world of infraction crimes, we had Becky Johnson was writing on the edge of the sidewalk, the curb, that sleep is not a crime. This was back 10 years ago. She was writing on the edge of the curb because it's not illegal to do that. At least that's what the law, the specifics of the law were at that time. And I actually wrote in the street something similar. It's not illegal to write it in the street. It was illegal to write. It isn't even illegal to write it on the sidewalk. And people write political slogans on the sidewalk all the time. But if you're protesting anti-homeless laws, that's a different thing. The police officer who arrested her on the request of Mia Duquette, who's still a worker with the Parks and Rec Department, ramped up her bail en route to the jail so that she had, it wasn't $100,000, I think her bail became $1,000 instead. Still, for people who are poor, finding $100 isn't the easiest thing to do.
Got $50,000 bail for sleeping.
Well, yeah. It raises a point that jails and prisons are currently, one of their main functions is to actually just warehouse poor people, which overlaps a lot with people of color, people with disabilities and mental health challenges. And the fact that Rebecca has also been placed for long periods of time in administrative segregation, which our local jail, by the way, likes to use that terminology, and it's actually talking about solitary confinement. So when I was on the phone with Rebecca and I asked her to describe what that looks like, she told me that the way it works is that she gets out of her cell for 1 hour a day, maybe three times a week. So minus those 3 hours, that's a lot of time to be sitting in a tiny cell, a tiny cage, without access to visits, sunlight, adequate you know, social interactions everybody needs. And the fact that their reasoning for putting her there was related to psychiatric and mental health issues, which, you know, research shows and common sense, I think, that being placed in solitary exacerbates any of those challenges that people are dealing with.
You've got a lot of notes there in front of you. Is there anything you want? Is there stuff in there that you want to bring up?
Yeah, I think it would be great. Actually, I have a really brief letter that Rebecca wrote to the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Go for it.
And this is really hits home on a lot of current prison issues. Actually,
was it published, by the way?
I don't think so, unless I missed it. But she did have a letter published a while back.
In the Sentinel?
Yes, in the Sentinel. Gosh, I gave you that one. Was that April 14th?
Okay, I vaguely remember.
I don't remember
the subject, but go ahead.
In any event, this one's responding to an article that Chief Deputy Craig Wilson wrote that was called something like, "Correctional Officers' Jobs Are Becoming Increasingly Complex." And it's a really interesting article that kind of really complicitly and problematically talks about how jails are becoming the new social service areas. And I think her piece really eloquently speaks to this. So she wrote this on May 7th. It's posted on the Cienbares website. I scanned it in if you want to see it, cienbares.org. So she says, "I'm a pre-trial inmate responding to Chief Deputy Craig Wilson's praise of this jail. Many staff here do handle immature, abusive, or violent behavior from inmates with integrity and compassion, serving people who are often in crisis. However, this system has the same flaws as law enforcement in general. Great autonomy without transparency leads to a lack of accountability. Inhumane treatment is an inevitable result. Lazy people taking advantage of secure government employment and those who enjoy exercising power over others use their positions here to capriciously neglect or abuse those in their care, creating problems and extra work for dedicated staff. The current centuries-old custody paradigm often rewards bad behavior by both inmates and staff. Innovative new approaches incorporating transparency and accountability to reward good behavior by both inmates and staff could result in a truly humane system and decrease crime rates. It's worth trying." So she sent that to the Sentinel on May 7th. And I really like what she says there, because she is acknowledging that there are people, you know, who work in the jail who, you know, it's not like this is about evil individuals, though people, when given power, will abuse it, especially in a situation where people are being held literally in captivity. But she's really getting at kind of the inevitable problem of caging people and then creating a group of people whose job it is to oversee them with no accountability and total impunity.
It's awfully vague is my problem, you know. I mean, I love it's the opposite of her interview, which is filled with specifics.
Well, I think she's an intelligent person who might be writing differently to get something published in the Sentinel than she is on a free radio.
That could be, but I think it has more meaning for me if she talks about particulars.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I mean, it's, you know, this is awfully vague, but yeah, I mean, it's and also it doesn't clarify whether there is, she's attacking fundamentally the system in specifically in Santa Cruz, or whether she's saying there are some bad apples and some reforms have to be made. I mean, Cienbares, for instance, specifically goes into particular concerns about the system here in Santa Cruz. You have four demands that you put out some months ago, and one of them was solitary confinement, the other was stop the expansion of the jail at the Roundtree, and the two others were
abolish solitary confinement, administrative segregation, and the use of other sorts of torture, such as the restraint chair that we have in the county jail, opposing the expansion of the Roundtree Detention Center, which is being done in the name of more programming space and a safer, better jail, which is not what's actually going to happen, and to cancel the contract with California Forensic Medical
Group. That was a major concern, the deaths of five people, at least, maybe six.
Yeah, and it's still a concern, and actually CFMG, this for-profit company, the largest in California running correctional care, is a huge issue. I mean, they're absolutely terrible, and it's very well publicized how terrible they are. And it's also not the only piece to the puzzle. They just settled a federal class action lawsuit for $4.8 million that came out of Monterey, with 21 plaintiffs in it. And this company is currently operating in the county jail and will have its contract up, I believe, in fall of this year, 2015. And the work that my organization is doing is to, first of all, get people out of the jail, get large amounts of people out of the jail, and that has a lot to do with pretrial detention. Also, to not have people stay in a county jail long enough to need medical care. And to look at what's been happening in the jail as an example of how badly we need real health care in the community. Like Rebecca said, she had health problems on her way into the jail. She already had them. But then they got extremely exacerbated. She said she went, you know, a month with extreme pain without receiving medication, evaluation, or even being acknowledged as experiencing that. So Simbares has been working to expose California Forensic Medical Group, which frankly is not that difficult to do. They have lawsuits in every county they're involved in. So the piece of the puzzle now is figuring out how we're going to actually fight for health care in a way that doesn't feed into this narrative that we need to expand the jail and invest, you know, millions of dollars in the jail. And also, we don't want to kick out California Forensic Medical Group only to replace them with another for-profit medical company like Horizon, who's the nation's biggest prison provider.
I know that we have had budget hearings around the city recently. I've been looking into that, and I'll be talking about it on Sunday more. Any indication of what the county budget situation is in terms of the amount of money going to the jail? Do you have any, are people in Simbares working on, you know, trying to figure out how much money is actually being used actually for the well-being or even the rehabilitation of the prisoners?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you want to talk about money, the medical care in the jail was initially outsourced to CFMG in the name of saving money. So what we're doing right now is by their own standards, looking at this amount of money, I don't have the number off the top of my head, that they claimed they would save in the year with each contract. And, you know, kind of turning that story around against them, because recently a lawsuit for wrongful death was actually settled in Santa Cruz County. We don't have the details on this right now, but we're digging that up so we can say, look, we're spending taxpayer money paying out lawsuits, you know, which is one issue. The bigger issue being, you know, someone's life was lost that will never come back. But one thing that we want to do is kind of change this narrative of cost saving and talk about all the different types of costs associated with incarcerating people at this rate, especially people who are already living lives of precarity and really need access to affordable housing and health care and these other things that would prevent incarceration. I think the entire basis for the medical care being outsourced is actually invalid and doesn't hold up based on their own arguments, let alone a separate analysis that we want to put forth that gives alternative visions of what we could be spending money on in Santa Cruz County.
You know, the second half of Rebecca's call, actually she called back, and I have it here, but the trouble is we are going to run into time problems and you will not be able to comment on it. I'm wondering if you're able to come back on Sunday sometime during the morning or early afternoon, because that would be give us more time to talk about it. I'd also be happy to have you listen to it beforehand if you like, although, you know, whatever feels right. We're talking with Courtney Hansen of Simbares, in the studio with us are a couple of other layabouts, ne'er-do-wells, and questionable individuals. We're keeping an eye on the two of us to make sure we don't stray too far up into our elitist class origins. In my case, white privilege and...
mostly so you just don't keep running off at the mouth.
And, of course, so we don't keep running off at the mouth, as one person puts it here. So you're up for that. You're saying you might be doing interested in coming back?
I think I will be free, and I have a feeling that between now and then I'll have another phone call with Rebecca. So I'd be happy to hear the rest of your talk with her.
I mean, one of the questions I have is, you know, the competency hearing was in April, so it's between... June, when Patton Hospital dumped her and sent her back here after 2 weeks, and April, why didn't she get rid of habeas corpus, even if she had to write it herself? She sounds like she's pretty literate.
Yeah, she actually has a background in this stuff, too, and is very knowledgeable on how the legal system works. And then just before I forget, because then I'd like to, you know, finish out hearing the rest of her talk, is that it's obvious what she really needs is not a public defender, as many people need more. But if there, I want to put a call out, because if anybody knows, and I'm in touch with a couple people, but if anyone knows any actual, like, civil rights attorneys that would be willing to take on a case with someone, please get in contact with me. You can get in contact with me through Simbares. Our email is simbares@gmail.com.
Spell Simbares.
It's S-I-N-B, as in boy, A-R-R-A-S. @gmail.com. I think that she's been stuck in there because of how much of a fighter she is, and she needs proper representation to, and to be successful and continue fighting.
You know, and rather than play that now, which we will not be able to play the complete interview, I'm going to play it later, and also it's a nice teaser, so you can all come back 9:30 on Sunday morning, or we can do it 10. What's a convenient time for you, Courtney? Anytime between 9:30 and 1 in the afternoon is when I do this show.
By the way, how about noon?
Okay, then we'll put it ahead to noon. If you want to catch the second part of this discussion of life in jail and how to get strangled by the courts in Santa Cruz, come back on noon Sunday, and that'll be, I guess, that's early June. I think we've almost reached June.
I'll be there then.
I'm not sure. Let's see the days.
Sunday?
No, I guess it's not. It's the 31st or something?
Sunday's the 31st.
So it'll be the 31st of May. If anybody has any comments or questions or their own experiences they wish to bring up around Santa Cruz County Jail or friends have been in jail or these issues and how we can address them, give a call. 427-3772 is the number here, 427-3772. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, and if you don't call in, I'm going to put on another bit of stuff from the street so that people who don't usually get to say anything get heard, at least briefly. You have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think there's just a lot of threads that can be connected for people to really understand what's going on with the jail and the courts. And I found it really interesting reading about the $4.8 million settlement with California Forensic Medical Group in Monterey. The Monterey County Sheriff, Steve Bernal. Bernal seems to be a popular name for great people. He was quoted in an article that people can read. It's called Settlement Reached in Monterey County Jail Class Action, and it's in the Californian. So a piece of the article says, in the works is an $89 million jail expansion project, which Monterey County Sheriff Bernal has said will likely ameliorate most of the concerns outlined in the lawsuit. So this really highlights why it's so important to really think through our strategies, and if we win, what is that going to look like? So we have discussed in the past canceling the contract with California Forensic Medical Group. That could potentially be a huge step forward, but to have a massive lawsuit like this settled and then have the county sheriff be able to use that to actually re-justify his plans to invest $89 million in incarceration, is something that I think people need to be extremely critical about in the wake of Prop 47. And in this moment where...
Remind our listeners what Prop 47 is.
Prop 47 was passed in the last election. California voters passed it, and what it does is switch over many, many misdemeanors, nonviolent, you know, property crimes, blah, 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 that were felonies are now misdemeanors. So this applies to people currently in jail that can file to have their cases changed. It applies to people retroactively who can have their records changed. So there are these potential positive things about the legislation. If you want to get involved, please get involved with Simbares, because now the work is actually making sure that the county provides legal support and funding to actually implement those changes. Flip side of the coin is actually that 65% of the money saved from Prop 47 goes to the Board of State and Community Corrections for mental health, substance abuse services. The only thing this board has done since it was created in the wake of Jerry Brown's realignment is dole out the money to fund county jail expansion projects. So when they say substance abuse treatment, what they mean is building that sort of treatment and service inside a jail, and funding millions and millions of dollars towards creating new wings, expanding and constructing new parts of the jail. So I know that's a lot of information touching on different things, but it's really important that people are critical right now in what law enforcement and politicians and bureaucrats are saying.
Any stats, Courtney, on how effective or ineffective any of these new appropriations for drug treatment programs inside jail have been? Do you have any sense of that?
Just because it's such a huge topic, all of that research has been done, and it's really clear that, you know, despite how great the sheriff's PowerPoint is in detailing, you know, how humane this new wing of the jail is going to be, Simbares is part of a group called CURB, Californians United for a Responsible Budget. And they're really diligent about debunking myths that any money toward incarceration and policing is actually going to have these effects or be able to provide these social services. We know that caging people does not make our community safer. It does not get to the root of any social and economic problems. And they've done a ton of research and put that out there for people to learn more about that topic.
And for skeptics, if they wanted to look at this research, go to CURB or go to what website?
Yeah,
I'm talking about, again, jail programs that supposedly help drug rehabilitation.
You mean programs inside the jail?
Yes. Correct.
Yeah, they're called curbprisonspending.org is the name of the website. And this isn't to say that we don't want programs in the jail, and we don't want conditions to be somewhat livable, but the absolute priority has to be getting people out of jail and lessening our reliance on this system and refusing to do anything that actually expands its reach and solidifies its roots even deeper.
You know, I often follow the latest police murders that are happening around the country.
It's hard to follow them.
There's so many.
I think that's actually websites now that kind of keep the tally going. And of course, I mean, nice to just focus on California or the two counties or three counties we're in. But you know, one of the things that's being kind of proposed is a Citizens Police Review Board again, like we had in Santa Cruz. Are better than the one we had in Santa Cruz 10, 15 years ago. And there was Toronto apparently had a somewhat stronger board. And I was watching the Real News. You may have seen the Real News. It's a it's a website in Baltimore that, you know, when there was this recent explosion when they murdered Freddie Gray. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got this, final indictment. You've got some indictments on sort of murderish charges around these deputies. But none of the higher-ups that covered up any of this stuff, I've noticed.
Right, it's conspiracy.
You know, none of that stuff. Real News covered that, and it's been covering the background of Baltimore and in terms of how this is is not a unique case, to say the least. It's an ongoing practice of murder and abuse, or violence and abuse. One of the things being asked for is the Citizens Police Review Board. And in Santa Cruz, we had one, and it didn't work because it was in close collusion with the police department. And
often
it was
they are
appointed by the city
no
council.
Teeth. Mm-hmm.
It had teeth, but
it didn't
use its teeth. It had, for example, subpoena powers and powers of investigation, which it never used ever. They never had
Get
any.
John Malkin in here.
They never had any public hearings, and didn't use it when Malkin was on the board either, for that matter. Although he was only there for a year, and the board only lasted between 1995 to 2002, when they began to even talk about racial profiling, use of force, display of force, class profiling and selective enforcement, they were eliminated by the city council. And instead we have this token guy, Bob Aronson, who makes secret reports to the city council that no one in the public can read. But we've recently had activists, Steve Plaich has been one, Simba Kenyatta is another, who called for a police review board again as though in kind of a mantra-like way, which always saddens me because I find... You obviously want to have some way to stop these murders and stop this constant occupation and oppression of the community, particularly poor and homeless people, which is my focus. And the issue is, what do you do about this? And actually, I think Free and I were talking about this before you came in. Toronto, you know, has a somewhat better situation, but even they had to get an official commission to go after the board after the massive abuses of people around G2 protests in 2012 that happened up there and against those protesters. But the real issue, as happened in Baltimore and Ferguson and Oakland and other cities, is you get change when the community mobilizes and pressures. But the problem is when the pressure drops, the same problem arises again.
And they'll try to make it drop with things like an indictment. Like,
Or we'll have some training of the police. You know, we'll train them in mental health issues. You know, the issue is the institutional structure of the police department, the military organization of the police department, the specialized origins of the police department in slave catcher activity. That's where they came from in the United States.
It is the history. Yeah, that's true.
And because of that, a whole fundamental change is needed on this issue. And in Santa Cruz... I kind of pick at the police department. I say, send me the public records to see who's getting tased every month. When did they draw their weapons? What are the contracts these cops have out to other agencies that they're not telling us about? And I'm still not getting the information, but I'm making the requests. And none of the organizations I know of, and that includes Sinvaris that I know of, are making these kinds of demands. I'm not trying to, put you on
the spot.
I'm putting you on
John
the spot. I'm putting you on the spot, of course. But I mean, I'm putting all these groups on the spot, NAACP, SCORE, ACLU, and in a way, I kind of thought, why bother to put them on the spot? We need new groups who are really interested in these.